There's an undeniable affordable housing crisis in this country. Homelessness is on the rise, and it's getting harder for many Americans to pay the rent. But when local leaders try to step in and solve the problem by adding homeless shelters, addiction treatment centers, or even more affordable housing, there's often lots of pushback from local residents, and a lot of times it's called NIMBY.
Not in my backyard. People don't want anything near them. Especially if it might help somebody else.
Thank you, Mr. George Carlin. And the pushback is happening in some of the more progressive cities around the country. Sarah Holder is a staff writer at City Lab covering local policy, affordable housing, labor, and technology. And she's with me now to talk about how neighborhood opposition groups are shutting down housing and transit projects across the country. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk about some of the reasons. Even before we get into the reasons, what types of neighborhoods are we seeing this happening in the most? Are these progressive? Are they wealthier communities? Is it places where there are more owners than renters?
The opposition to new development is, first of all, not a new phenomenon by any means. A lot of cities and states have historically maintained restrictive local zoning codes. Often now we do see this in more progressive, whiter, wealthier neighborhoods. Research shows that white wealthy homeowners dominate local planning meetings where a lot of the development or anti-development agendas are set. So, in California, for example, roughly 80% of residential land is basically only zoned for single family homes with some exemptions for granny flats. But in most of U.S. cities, it's illegal to build anything but single family homes on 75% of each city's residential land. So the resistance is honestly coming from everywhere, but it's been most striking in sort of progressive strongholds.
I want to talk about the fact that it doesn't just stop at housing. I'm going to read here from a Huffington Post piece about different examples that they give. A Los Angeles neighborhood that threatened to sue the city over the installation of a bike lane. Seattle residents in one of the wealthier neighborhoods wanting special exemptions for putting in a light rail station. And thousands of people booing a homeless man who got up to speak in support of a new shelter in Salt Lake City. So these are like different types of initiatives, not just affordable housing, that seem to be getting shut down. What is blocking this? I mean, is this sort of coded language for something other than home values being impacted?
Yeah, so I mean, the arguments are often that more homes, for example, will increase traffic and congestion. You know, they'll crowd the schools, there'll be less parking, there'll be less shade. But a lot of it does come down to a change in neighborhood character. So some of these arguments are aesthetic, but others are often racially and class coded. It's not that, you don't want more access to the city through the light rail station, for example, but you might not want lower income folks to come in.
In order to, in other words, take the light rail through that neighborhood where it didn't currently exist before.
Right. And I've written about San Francisco. The city had a plan to build a navigation homeless shelter in a wealthy neighborhood in the Embarcadero. Neighborhood residents banded together and started a GoFundMe campaign to basically raise money for legal action to stop the homeless shelter from being built. So they're really, you know, saying the quiet part loud in a lot of places. Ultimately, the city is building the homeless shelter. But I thought that was a really other striking example.
And we've seen it here in New York City, particularly when it comes to more school integration, for example. Communities that we would assume are quote unquote progressive are actually pushing back on some of the initiatives to fulfill that vision of progressivism, if you will. I'm wondering, how do cities get around that? You mentioned in San Francisco, they ended up building the homeless shelter. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, there was much community engagement. There were a few more meetings. But ultimately, the need in San Francisco for homeless shelters is so vast. And I think that there was the political will to get that done. But I also wanted to point out that it's not only wealthy homeowners who are opposing, for example, a new development. Some progressive tenant groups fear development as well, because they think it could threaten existing residents, some of them low income, and that developers, when given free rein to build buildings, that they'll build luxury condos that, could be ugly or could just drive prices up and jumpstart the gentrification. So it's not a simple political issue at all.
We know, speaking of politics, that last month President Trump signed an executive order that would create a federal affordable housing council. What would that do, and how would that play with, for example, HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Unit?
Trump signed an executive order to create a committee, which will be led by Ben Carson, to eliminate barriers to affordable housing development. So he wants to remove regulatory barriers at the federal level and push states and cities to do the same. And he talked a lot about, you know, the affordable housing crisis that is gripping the nation. This is interesting because it does dovetail with a lot of efforts at the city level to do just that. You know, Minneapolis became the first city to eliminate single family zoning in what Mayor Jacob Frey calls an effort to, you know, atone for the segregation policies of the past last year. And Oregon became the first state to do so just last month. And, you know, nationwide, we built 12 million units last year, but researchers say that we would need to be building 250,000 more in order to keep pace with population growth. You know, 11 million renters pay 50% or more of their income on rent. So it's exciting to have housing advocates that there is sort of this buy-in from both cities and now from the federal level. I will say that housing advocates caution that, you know, this is a committee to make a plan to then perhaps take some action. Diane Yentl, the president of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, points out that, you know, Trump's new commitment perhaps to building more affordable housing is a bit antithetical to other HUD actions, like the gutting of the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Act. And there are some worries or some reporting on the fact that Trump may use different sticks instead of carrots, for example, by targeting community development block grants, perhaps, which generally support low-income neighborhoods. Again, there has been no evidence that he will, but this is a tactic favored by other Republicans and is reflected in some reporting.
Sarah Holder is a staff writer at CityLab covering local policy, affordable housing, labor, and technology. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.